Hello and welcome back to the Keeping Up Appearances podcast. We are, not just our usual team. We've got me, Max, we've got Griffin on again, and we are glad to welcome Callum back this week, who we haven't seen now for a very long time. Was it the last international break, in fact? Or maybe even the one before? Last time you were on?
Definitely wasn't the last international break. Might have been the one before. It was one of the first. Yeah. Was it like maybe the third or fourth of the season?
It was early on. How far we've come since then?
I know, yeah. It's a different beast now, isn't it? But...
It is, honestly. It's building up steam. Some are saying it's all thanks to Big Griff, but that's just what the public are saying, you know what I mean?
That's all I've heard.
Can I get that in writing, please, Sean?
Definitely not. Carl, how have you been since? Been up so much?
Yeah, not bad. No, all good. Same old, same old. Trying to enjoy Everton. Not enjoyed that too much.
But you have now. You have after this weekend, surely.
Yeah, after this weekend, yeah. I know we'll speak about it a bit later on, but I think it's probably the best. I think it's the best we've played all season, I think, to be honest, on and off the ball. Yeah. But we can go into that a bit later. But yeah, it was actually a good weekend of football for us. Nice to do that just before the international break as well. But yeah, I think it's actually been a good season of football to watch. I think it's been interesting. So I think probably since when I was last on, it was like Liverpool were definitely going to win the league and everything else. So it's definitely all changed. Maybe that shows how long I haven't been on for. But it's been an exciting season where all teams have kind of. I've done different things since then.
Have you got a season ticket, Carl?
I have.
At your grand, yeah?
Yep.
Nice. How's that been? You enjoyed the new stadium?
It's unbelievable. The stadium itself is like insane. It just is insane. It's no Goodison. And it just feels different. But it was always going to be winning. But the stadium itself is just like, it's incredible. Everything I think we wanted Dan Meese to do with the stadium, he did it pretty much. We wanted it to be steep, close to the pitch. We wanted it to like hold the sound, and it does all that to like an unbelievable level. I think it just needs to kind of build up, which it's going to take years in it, but to build up kind of like a bit of character and story and personality and stuff like that. I think obviously the Palace game, I think that was like its first Goodison moment, where we kind of had that comeback and the late goals, and it kind of felt a bit like Goodison. Because the way it all happened, but it's going to need more of that. I think it needs more branding. It needs more Everton stuff around the stadium. So maybe Sean feels the same. It's still quite like feels quite bare, but I think as the games have gone on, Everton teams have got a little bit better about it. They're obviously just kind of learning on the job, aren't they? Which is always going to happen.
But it I do feel like they are getting there, though, aren't they? Like even from the last game to this weekend, they've like started putting stuff up in stairwells and stuff, haven't they? Like,
yeah,
they're just adding to it as we go. I also think, and this potentially will be controversial for Everton fans, but when I know you're saying like it felt like how Goodison did. Like obviously, I didn't go to Goodison anywhere near as much as you. I didn't have a season ticket for a long time. Goodison was a lot of the time wasn't the happiest place, was it? It wasn't like the most positive place in the world.
No, but that was kind of the charm, wasn't it? And I think in the Palace game, it kind of got a bit nasty for the last half hour. And it wasn't, when I say Goodison moment, I just mean like it was the late comeback. It was the crowd got on backs of it. It just kind of lifted. Where like before then, we'd won maybe two or three, but they were quite comfortable wins. Not really happened. I think everyone was just still excited to be in the new stadium. But I think you are right though with them putting like stuff up now and. Even like around the stadium, you've started putting things up, haven't you? And obviously, to get the stadium ready for the first game of the season, no one cares about if a wall's painted blue or not. They just need to get it ready to people to sit in it. I think now they're starting to make it better. But I've not been to inside Tottenham Stadium, but because like although it's made for Everton, they're making it for a bigger purpose. I need to hold like international games, other sports, concerts. How much do they actually want it full of Everton stuff, if you know what I mean? Because it's that kind of small stuff to cover. I don't know. I don't know if like it being unbranded is like maybe like a business decision as well. Hopefully it's not, because I don't think that's right. It should be our stadium first and then kind of everything else secondary. But That's what I kind of feel.
It'll be beneficial for you, though, that it does have that side of it. It's bringing some revenue in, surely.
Oh, no, that rugby game, like when you're on Twitter after the rugby game, everyone was saying like how unbelievable it was, and it should be like the home of rugby for like the North and things like that. And, you know, that's great if so.
It looked great with a red pirate set next, like, to be fair.
Yeah, it didn't.
I'm sure you're all fucking fuming about that. Getting on Twitter straight away.
I don't actually look. There wasn't that much reaction from what I saw.
Nah,
I think it was probably more like Reds.
I only see Liverpool fans
talking about it.
Yeah, it's only Callum as well who sees things like red. You know, famously, Callum's dad didn't drink Carlsberg. You know, that's the level you're dealing at.
Yeah, wouldn't drink Carlsberg. Yeah, of course you wouldn't. Why would you? Have you ever drank Chang?
Yeah, Chang's lovely, mate. I'm not pathetic like you and your dad.
Or better with steak.
Yeah, I've not done that, to be fair, but I bet with anything else.
Bitter.
I tell you what, talking of bets, Sean, bad week for Earl Griff here on the old betting front. I tell you what, did you hear about the incendiary, Cal?
Yeah, I've seen it, the bookings.
So Max, basically, I have a flutter on football every week. Like, bookings tend to be like what I go with. So I had four yellow cards across the Saturday games. So 2 at 3 o'clock, the R5, and the 8. The first three came in. It was a fiver to win £600. I was like, oh my god, and I could really do with that £600, obviously. It got to half time in the Chelsea game. And he were offering £90 cash out. And I was like, oh, that's too low with that. But £90 at the moment, it's quite a lot. You know, goes far. So cashed out. 49th minute, that Andre got booked. My brother texted me going, hey, Andre's just been booked. I was like, I've cashed out. I was absolutely, I honestly could have been sick physically. It was that bad. But
when the full stop.
That's a great, yeah. Look at my body shape and what this does to you. Oh, see, I've gone.
You disappeared.
Yeah. Abracadabra, baby. Clever this, but this apartment's posh.
Never end the money there when you can join like the circus as the invisible man.
Do you want this new apartment I've got is absolutely sick.
Are you doing well?
There's your clip. There's your clip. This is going viral, baby.
It's a shame anyone listening to this won't see that because that was unbelievable. Right, Max, how's life been post Roger Williams? What you do? Sitting in your house, bored.
I've enjoyed like some of the time off, to be fair, but I'm still, the season's still winding down with the youth soccer stuff, so they've still got like a week left, so I'm obviously training them every most days throughout the week, and then games on Sunday. So got one more week of that, but then the high school teams all come back. So we've done a little bit of recruiting for the college. Went to a couple of games last week, watched some future players, hopefully. And then getting ready for Thanksgiving.
What does it? When's that? End of November.
Yeah, like 2 weeks.
What do you do for that? We'll probably come up to it obviously in a couple of weeks. Is it just like a Christmas? Is that all you do? Christmas without the decorations.
Yeah, pretty much without the gifts. Yeah, it's just day off.
It's just a roast dinner.
Literally.
That sounds
it's a big roast dinner but it's on a Thursday. Everyone's off. Football's on telly. Yeah, just eating food all day. Yeah. So.
Take a day off, like.
Yeah. That's decent. We go out. We usually go out on like the Wednesday, and then we play like a little turkey bowl on Saturday. We play football, American football. Which is always fun.
Who plays that?
Just all our mates and some of the friends and family and stuff like that.
Contact, like?
Flag.
Can I say?
Flag.
Contact.
Yeah, imagine. Pads and all. Helmets.
Well, I was just wondering how you would play that.
You'd be fine, Griffin.
Yeah. I'd be like, scrum half. I'd be like that blow up thing that they all tackle in training. The Michelin man like that. This is one of the podcasts that people need to watch rather than listen to this episode.
I'd say that, yeah. I'll clip this up as like a 10-minute clip. It'll be fine.
Yeah, if it goes tits up as well, I'll just vanish. So it'll be good.
Yeah, when you say something in a minute, it's also nonsense. Just, yeah, just
you know what to do. Apparate. See ya.
All right, go on. We'll leave it there then. I will move on to the footy. Now, Carl's briefly touched on it, but it was an up and down weekend on Merseyside, I'd say. Obviously, me and Callum being at the Hill Dickie watching the Blues play Fulham off the park. And then on the other side, Liverpool doing the opposite against City. Before we get into the footy, though, I know obviously a lot of people are talking about this at the minute, kind of big talking points across the media is referees and VAR, because obviously played a big part in both the Everton game and the Liverpool game. Before we go anywhere, and obviously I want to hear your point of view on all of it. For me, I met Tosh at half time at the match, and I said to him, I very rarely get angry at the game. Like, I'm not one of these fellas who like shouts because I just think like the ref can't hear you. Like, what are you shouting for? But on Saturday, I was fuming. Like, I don't know, you're quite a laid back fella, Carl. I don't know how annoyed you get. I was genuinely so annoyed. It wasn't even about like the goals, because the goals seemed to be like correct, if you know what I mean. I just felt like some of the other decisions were just nonsense. And don't get me wrong, it helps with Everton, I feel like, because that's what gets the Everton fans on board, as you say, Carl. And I feel like it worked massively. It just got the ground going. But yeah, I just felt like for some reason it was just a terrible performance, and it really made me angry. So parking me there, where do you three stand on the weekend and both games really, and the decisions that were made? Maybe if we start with Liverpool first, that's probably the more news really.
I'll lead. I'll go first. I think not even just because of the Liverpool game, and I know like Tosh made this point, like now we're against it because the decision's just gone against us. That's not the case, and I really want to make that clear. I think VAR has completely ruined the game, and the enjoyment as a football fan. And the weekend just gone is prime example on like two occasions when you score, and you know. That's the joy of football, and it's the same for anyone. When you score, you celebrate, and you know that's what you do. You're scared to do that because obviously they just go and check it on VAR, and they check everything. It's like they don't even just check the first, like almost like the point of contact. They check everything before that as well. So no matter what type of goal it is, they always check VAR. So you're always on tenterhooks of that. But then even things like the penalty save. So obviously you save the penalty, you celebrate again. They check that to see if he come off his line. So I think just that like joy of football has gone totally because of AR. And we all know the biggest thing is that you celebrate, you're passionate about what your team does. And I think to take that away is madness. It's rubbish. And on top of that, the referees, the standard of referees, they're so scared to make a decision, or like they don't make any decisions anymore because VAR just tells them what to do. Like that penalty decision on the weekend, I actually think it was a penalty. I think he hits his foot no matter what. Like if you, that doc who's obviously running at pace, he takes his foot with his knee, penalty. But if you look at the referee, he's got such a clear view of it, and he's squatted like referees do when they go like bang on. He couldn't be more clear straight ahead of it, and he doesn't give a penalty. But then VAR gives a penalty. Which is fine, because in theory it's the right decision, but it doesn't need to be football. It shouldn't be like an exact science type thing. And I think to rely on it so heavily, the way it's influenced every decision in the game now, it's almost sad to see, I think.
Yeah, it's I have a very different like relationship towards referees, because obviously my job in America, it's like we used, like before COVID, I think we had like 4,000 or 5,000 referees available to us. Now we've got like 1,500. So like, I don't tend to get angry either. I tend to like, it's like, I can't affect it. And as a fan, it's like, whatever. I agree, VAR is the problem. I don't think the referee is clearly helping Liverpool win the league, Sean, which you said a few weeks ago. I think that's changed. But the penalty was like, I actually think it's soft, really soft. I feel like it's not enough contact to make someone go flying to the floor. And I feel like that gets rewarded in VAR now, because now that I'm looking for any contact, anything, regardless of how strong it is or not. And then the offside was just like, it's just mad. He is in offside position, but not a chance he's in line. He's not blocking Donnarumma. Donnarumma has to dive that way anyway, because the ball is going that way. If it hits Robertson, it is offside. So I don't think that this whole thing, like, he's interfering. He's not interfering. And it was what was interesting, because I didn't watch the game. I watched the highlights because I was working all day, but the entire team's in the corner and then the flag goes up. Like, it didn't go up right away. And then they check on VAR afterwards. I thought that was a bit off as well.
I think the other thing about it, like, I agree with your point, Max. The other thing about it is, like, the person in VAR that game is Michael Oliver. Now, I know Liverpool fans don't like Michael Oliver, fine, and I'm not one to buy into that. But the integrity of, like, referees, I think, is brought into question to an extent. And you see that with the likes of David Coote, as an example, who was one of the best referees in the Premier, you know, apparently for a year ago. And now, obviously, what's happened to him. I'm not saying Michael Oliver is any way like that, but who's he to make that decision when he's not there? And particularly with it being Michael Oliver against Liverpool and all them connotations, the VAR, I don't think anyone almost trusts them either, type thing. So it ruins the whole level. The whole game is all brought into question by a decision like that. I think Callum's point about the offside, I thought he was bang on about that, and, like, some credit needs to go to City, because they're so well versed because of Pep that they all move out straight away to catch people offside. So testament to them on that thing. And by the letter of the law, there's defo contention. But I agree with you, Max. I mean, it's not offside. He's not Donnarumma's not going to save it. He's not blocking Donnarumma. He's not going to touch it. Obviously, Callum's shaking his head because he's an Everton fan through and through. Fair enough, but. Yeah,
my thing with that, right, from a footballing point of view, the whole thing about being interfering with play is that he is either going to touch the ball, which he doesn't, and he doesn't try to, he gets out of the way, or he's in the line of the goalkeeper, and he's not in the line of the goalkeeper. Van Dijk's at the back post, Robertson's at the front post. He's not in the line, so it's irrelevant. Those two referees, the one who refereed the game and Michael Oliver, both give two goals to City in the last year in the same situation. Bernardo Silva is directly in front of the goalkeeper and ducks out the way, and they give a goal. And then the one with Akanji steps over the ball. So if anyone's going to say, like, they're offside, and then say Robertson was, it's a joke, and it's clearly just a biased opinion, which I'm sure Callum's about to give. From a footballing point of view, let's say it's not a goal interfere with the field. A player's walking back from offside, and he lets the ball run past them or steps over it. He's not interfering with play. He has to switch the ball, and another player runs through. That's not offside. It's not the rule.
That point as well, I said about it being that it's almost like they've made it an exact science. If it is an exact science, the consistency needs to be there on the decisions. And the fact that there isn't consistency, i.e. what Max just said, you question VAR then. So you question the exact science that they've introduced, because it doesn't deliver the same results, if that makes sense.
It does.
And that's so upsetting.
I think the worst thing here is, and we've got our opinions on the offside, right? If there was no VAR and that offside was given, we're just talking about whether it was a bad decision or not, and we're moving on. I think there's way more to it, and what you said, Griffin, the lack of trust. And I think just there's no consistency. I also think, in general, England's referees are pretty poor. When you watch the Champions League midweek, there's some the higher standard referees in other countries right now. We're meant to have the best league in the world, but we definitely don't have the best referees. Callum, take it away.
Yeah, right. I've got... There's a lot to reply to there. I think I've got a...
Fucking Bruce Almighty over there.
Right, so I think Griffin is right in the fact that what I don't like with VAR is, and I suppose the game, they've made up so many rules that now they've got to kind of, like, referee the game to all of these mad rules that they've kind of made up. Instead of just keeping football dead simple, they're like chasing the tail, because they're, like, making up all these, like, rules that you can and can't do. Then they're trying to, like, kind of make decisions to kind of make those rules, like, seem like they make sense. And I think with it being like an exact science where like you can be offside by like a toe, but then you see someone taking a throw in, and I know this is a stupid example, they'll throw it 20 yards forward from where it went out. It's like that's a big difference. Like how can they be so like granular over one thing, but then just let something else just completely like go? Same with like the you're only VAR for some things and not others. You get a corner, but it should have been a goal kick and score straight from that.
Mm.
But then it makes no difference. That's the thing that annoys me about it. Either like do it and do it totally, or just kind of scrap it. Which I think that annoys me a bit. The fact that like you can get away with certain things, but then not others. Which is annoying. I think Griffin said about the penalty. I think it is a penalty, and I don't think he falls. He actually doesn't. Doku, to be fair, doesn't throw himself to the floor. He kind of tries his best to stay up. And had the keeper not took his knee, Doku probably just has a clean shot on goal, but he doesn't because he's kind of taken him out. The referee's looked at it and maybe thought he's kind of just slipped. It was wet, wasn't it? And a few players had slipped anyway. So I think it was a pen. In terms of them checking it, obviously they check all the pens, which is fair enough because, again, they've made this rule where he's got to have at least 1 foot over the line when he dives. So I think that's worth checking. But also, I don't think they're actually checking for that. They were checking for Van Dijk, who cleared it. Because Van Dijk cleared the save, didn't he? And he could have well been in the box by the time Haaland had saved. So I think that's what they were checking for, rather than the keeper being off the line. I think that was a suggestion that they were checking the defenders, whether they'd encroached, rather than...
Well, all right, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, maybe I was wrong about that. But even just like, come on.
I think as well, with the celebrating, and I'm not kind of, you know, beating this drum of, oh, you need to go to the game or whatever, but in the stadium, you celebrate it. You don't be offside. You celebrate it, but then obviously you look at it and you think, to be fair, the three goals Everton had, which we'll get onto in a bit, as soon as I stood up, I kind of thought, yeah, he's offside. You could see that the flag went up. And to be fair, in the moment, for most of ours, I thought, that's probably offside. I thought...
There's no way you thought they were offside.
The one that... the Tarkowski scored, I actually thought in dive was offside from Tarkowski's header. I thought that one was offside. The one where Ndai slides in, I thought Ndai was offside, but then obviously he touched it.
What was your opinion on the Robertson one?
I haven't finished on Liverpool yet, Max.
I do want to talk about Everton as well.
Long guess, lad.
Don't worry. Okay, I'll probably leave having a go at referees because that's been kind of done. But the Robinson thing, he's 100% offside. He just is. The ball is headed.
You're too far the other way, honestly.
Let
him make his point.
I didn't interrupt you. The ball is headed to Robinson's direction and Robinson ducks to get out of the way of the ball. That's as good as interfering as... I don't know why that isn't interfering. If he stands still, it hits him. So and he ducks to get out of the way of it.
What is he interfering with?
The keeper. The flight of the ball. Because if
the keeper's not waiting. The keeper's not waiting for it to hit him.
Sorry. The flight of the ball. So the ball changed its fucking flight because he ducked.
If he wouldn't have got out of the way, it would have been offside.
The keeper's not waiting. The keeper
100% has one eye on him. It's the same as if a defender has to try and play the ball, then there's a player standing behind him. They don't actually have to make an attempt. If he has to deliberately defend it, then he's offside.
But that happens all the time, when it doesn't get given offside.
If the ball goes in the other, in, I think if Van Dijk nods it into his like kind of near post, I don't think anyone's questioning it. The fact that it's gone towards Robinson, he's ducked. It's hard, and it's one of them. But again, I think the defence have got out quicker than Robinson has.
Do you think if Robinson's not there, Donnarumma saves her?
No,
I don't think that matters.
Well, that's the thing. You're saying he interferes with the flight of the ball, and he's affecting Donnarumma.
He interferes
there.
With that play 100%. He's standing on Rumi's six-yard box.
He's to his left, though, and the ball's coming from the right, and he actually already starts to dive as the ball's on its way. He's got no idea about Robertson. He's already diving to where the ball goes.
I think you're wrong to think Griffin might say he's an elite goalie. He has no idea of the player in his 6 yards.
No, he has an idea.
He's 100%
already started to dive before Robertson's even ducked. he's diving across the goal.
I don't think it's as black and white as Max is saying, don't get me wrong. I don't. There is contention because Callum is right, he is in the 6-yard box. Also, on that point about him being a league goalie, Callum, well, he is a league goalie.
I know we're not getting into that. But no, he headed it across into Robertson's direction.
I think if
Robertson hasn't, he's ducked. And so it's the same as if it was a shot and the player's lifted his leg to get out the way.
Yeah, but if the angle of the head when he heads the ball, if Robertson is stood from like say Van Dijk to Robertson to the goalie and Donnarumma can't see it, then I totally agree with your point, and I'd be saying defo. But he's not, so he is in front of the ball flight, absolutely, but he's not in front of or obstructing Donnarumma in any way. Donnarumma sees it from when the ball gets headed to where it's going. He doesn't like. He doesn't hesitate, unlike Shimmy, as if Robertson's going to touch it. He makes a move to dive straight away, and he can't get near it.
I'll be honest, right? We're saying he doesn't hesitate to think, oh, these players are working on reactions that like we wouldn't even see. Honestly, he's delaying his worry about whatever he does.
How can you say it's 100% offside then, based on that, if they're operating on reflexes that are like that? If you're 100% certain, you're 100%...
He was in an offside position. That's why. He was actually in an offside position, wasn't he?
But the rule is you have to be offside to interfere with play. It's not just you behind the last line anymore.
I think Duggan suggests that you're interfering, because if you didn't duck, then you would have hit the ball.
But the decisions that Max has talked about, i.e. the ones the City got, so I think Nathan Aki scores a goal.
I've not seen the Aki one. The silver one, my thing is for that, when he's actually in the way of the goalie, he's not actually in an offside position because the ball hasn't been headed yet. And he's actually the other side of him by the time.
But the keeper's thinking about
it. If Aiken dies against, was it Tottenham O'Brien? But you see, before the head's actually made, he's in an offside position in front of the goalie. By the time O'Brien heads it, and dies actually behind the goalie. And that was classed as interfering. He's actually behind them towards like the back post. I think it's harsh, but I'd like it is what it is, isn't it? That is kind of the rule. And I think if a player ducks to get out the way of a ball, that is off. That's enough for me to be like, that's offside. The ball's put over to him, and he ducks. But put over to his direction, and he ducks to get out the way of it. I think that's...
It's definitely more contentious than it's 100% offside, though. And I think... And another point on the football side of things is that Liverpool fans will make it out like, oh, God, we got that goal disallowed. It doesn't make any difference, that goal, by the way, because we were miles off it before and after that. So that's not affected the game. I think if we're just talking about referees and VAR, it's...
Yeah. I would disagree with that. I mean,
you're going 1-1 and probably affecting. All I would say is, though, I know you said the play's in the corner. Have you actually seen the replay of it? The way Robertson walks away. I think Robertson knows he's offside.
Yeah, because he knows Robertson's probably going to give it.
He knows that he was offside and he got out of the way of it.
Argues with the referee at half time about it being not offside.
Yeah. You can walk away that way. You can act as if like you knew he was offside position, but at the same time, he knows a referee like them are gonna give these consensus.
Yeah, I know, Callum. You think you're some sort of genius on body language expert and all this thing because you did a psychology GCSE, but you're not.
You always say that, Callum. Come on.
Yeah. Did you see Robertson how he acted when he walked away? What, where we had a goal disallowed? Yeah. Oh, what do you expect him to be doing?
No. He didn't celebrate the goal.
Can I just throw out? I haven't spoken about half an hour. I'm just letting it all flow. Does in terms of like the City one and this Liverpool one, is distance to the keeper? Are we not like, as Callum says, he's literally like arm's length away from him. Whereas on the City one, was it Bernardo Silva? He's like ages away. So in terms of Donnarumma's reactions. And Callum's talking about reactions. Like, Donnarumma is like on a different planet to any of us in terms of like that, especially in terms of goal and goal. But his reactions from the ball being there where Robertson's ducked are insane how fast he's going to make that decision. That's got to be taken into account.
But again, though, the silver one's different because the ball is on line with silver, on line to goalkeeper. Whereas the ball is online to the corner of the goal where Robertson is, and Donnarumma.
Yeah, Donnarumma's already reacted.
It was Callum.
He's reacted off the header.
The Bernardo Silva is in front of the goalkeeper on a linear path, and he ducks out the way, and he gives the goal. The Akanji one similar to this one. The Akanji one similar to this one because it's going to the corner of the goal. The corner of the goal. Honestly, and he jumps over the ball.
Rewatch the Silva one. He's in the front of the goal before it gets headed. When the corner's taken, he's kind of like backing into the goalie. But when he actually makes the header, Silva's nowhere near him.
So
and the ball just goes straight ahead of the goalie. So when Silva's like backing into him and like interfering with the goalie, he's not actually in an offside position. Because it's from a corner, so he can't be offside from a corner.
But he's offside from the header. Yeah, so that's why we're talking about the corner, we're talking about a header.
He's offside from the header, but he's away from the goalie when it gets headed.
So
the goalie still think. The goalie's still got to think about someone who is directly interfering with him, though, hasn't he?
Hang on a minute, sorry. I'm going to interrupt there because to your point, Callum, he's not near the keeper. Then Robertson's almost be onside. I'm saying Bernardo Silva was in front of the keeper. You're saying he wasn't near the keeper and he's ducked out the way of a ball and then the goal's been given. So you're saying that's sure counted.
I don't think Bernardo Silva did.
He practically falls over getting out the way. Unless we're not talking about the same goal. What's he getting out of the way of? A fucking ghost.
I think Callum's just ruined his own point there.
Exactly.
Now he's just being like a child.
You've just contradicted your point about Robertson's goal by saying Bernardo Silva should have been allowed.
I think you've just done that, Callum.
I didn't say Bernardo Silva should have been allowed. I said he was nowhere near. I said he wasn't an offside and he did.
You just said on the header he's offside. What's he getting out the way of? He gets out the way of the ball and almost falls over.
He's in an offside position, but he's not in the way of the ball. 100% he's not.
So what did he get out the way of? He practically almost falls over, unless we're completely talking about a distinct goal.
No, it's
you see that argument? Callum's argument when he does that? He just turns into Adam Ink was.
It's the right... No, it's the same goal. Sorry, not the same goal, but... He's not in front of the goal. Away from the ball as well.
I think we should end this soon because it's going to end up this
year.
All I was going to say was, you're all shouting at Callum. You don't even let them speak. You're not letting them speak.
I think he did argue and got caught up. The Akanji one is more similar because Akanji is not in front of the goal. He's on the side and he jumps out the way and he gives that goal. So that's where my description is. The Bernardo Silva, I think he is in front. But going back to your point, Griffin, I actually think going in at half time 1-1 when you haven't played poorly and you've just been given a goal changes a lot of things. I think ultimately the second half we weren't great anyway, and I think they could have went on to go win the game anyway, City. But going in at 1-1 when you know you've been playing poorly, and you can change things to adjust then, and then say, hey, let's not do this. Let's sit back further or whatever. I think it changes, but. Ultimately, you're right. We were so far off the pace again. Midweek against Real Madrid, we are absolutely brilliant. The best game I've seen Liverpool play for a long, long time, even going back to last year. And then to come out and play so poorly against City was just disappointing. But enough of that. Everton.
No, let's stay with Liverpool just for a minute.
Oh, God damn it.
I just want to talk about two things I want to bring up. Number one, I know we've discussed them in the last couple of weeks. Where are we all on Salah, like amongst Liverpool fans? Where are you now? Like, should he still be playing? Should he be dropped?
Yeah, probably. I don't. He's clearly not playing well. I feel like he's very affected by Diogo Jota's death last year. I think he just doesn't want to. He's not really as bothered. He's so emotional. Every season, there's always something he was trying to prove or a point to prove and try and do something different. This year, he's just like. He's so off it. I think Liverpool fans, they get called the E-fans now, Sean. You know, the online stuff, they're getting called Liverpool E-fans who are abusing Salah online. And like last week, he took stuff down, whatever. He's just massively struggling. He's underperforming. And they need to start thinking about someone else to play, though, or playing some sort of different way. Isak's back on the bench now, or back around the team anyway. They're going to have to do something because he just seems so out of it. Like, so out of it.
Yeah, I'm sure every Liverpool fan would agree, and I'd go as far as to say, especially in my lifetime, you know, you're talking Gerrard, Suarez, Salah, in my lifetime, of the best players ever to play for Liverpool, and never take that away from him. But it almost feels now that we potentially should have let him go last season, just gone. Like, at the end, just let him go, because you can keep someone for too long, and you think... Like, even yesterday, what Salah used to be so good at is he'd get you on the edge of the seat when he had the ball going at someone. But he seems to have lost that just turn of pace that even yesterday in City when he had the ball and going at someone, he just loses it straight away. And his effect on the game used to be like so clinical. And even if he played poorly, even though he's done that twice this season, it'd still contribute goals or assists. Whereas he's lost that now as well. So it's like Liverpool's strength for so long was the pressing and press from the front, and Salah was key to that, as was the front three. You know, but Salah did do his fair share. Now it feels like he just hasn't got that. Like the turn of pace, I suppose, is the big thing that a winger, if he's playing as a winger or an inside forward, that he is, you need that. So if he hasn't got that, they need to adapt his game to someone else. Because it's having a detriment on the whole team. Yesterday, the City game, they have the ball at the back, and City, don't get me wrong, are a fantastic side, but they're not the City that us three have seen. You know, that lineup that you see yesterday, I was thinking, we'll beat them, because the midfield didn't look... I thought we'd overpower them in midfield. I thought the team's good, but not massively good. They get the ball at the back about four or five times and pass it out around Liverpool, go straight up to the other end and attack. Under Klopp, under the seasons we've had in the past with Salah, Mane, Firmino, that type of player, even Diaz, even Nunes, I know Nunes was a bit of a bit pressed from the front massively. We haven't got that anymore. We've lost that this season, it seems. So for City to pass around just like that, that's not Liverpool that we're so used to. So it's like, I think I said weeks and weeks ago now about the identity, and about Slot doesn't kind of know what we are and what we're doing. It felt like that again yesterday against City, for us not to turn up. We didn't press, we didn't run, we lost every duel. The one all thing, I take your point, Max, but because we were so poor in like just running, like Gary Neville said it on commentary, we looked leggy after about 20 minutes. Mm. We didn't get close to them. For them to pass it around us, that's not like... Where's the, like, we said it about Fabinho, Henderson, Wijnaldum, Milner, just, like, people who would die for the team, run into the ground. None of them did that yesterday, apart from Bradley, I felt.
Yeah, I think for Salah now, it's like, he obviously had a massive season last year. By the way, we can't, like, he was, what, fifth in the Ballon d'Or vote when he got votes to be the Ballon d'Or winner. I think now it's like, he's eventually going to go to Saudi Arabia, probably. Whether it's the summer or next year for free. But I think if you're Liverpool and you get a big offer in January, you're thinking about that. And I think there's talk of Semenyo coming in because Richard Hughes knows the clause that's in the contract, because he's the one who set the contract up. We're not going to pay 100 million for Semenyo. It might be something cheaper. I think you might have to start thinking about it, unfortunately. Probably gets too bad.
On the same lines, then, obviously Salah's underperforming. We will move on from Liverpool. He's got these things. Why then, and this is probably a question for everyone, why is Florian Wirtz so protected by football from criticism? Because if you think about some of the, like, the foreign imports we've had over the last couple of years, like, Havertz was never given a chance when he came in. Jokeres has faced, like, constant... Everyone's waiting for him to slip up. I don't, in fairness, he hasn't. He's done decent. Why is no one talking about the absolute disaster that is Florian Wirtz?
I don't think he is an absolute disaster.
I don't know. He's being panned by everybody.
I couldn't disagree more. I don't feel like he is.
I think outside Liverpool he is. I think in Liverpool, Liverpool fans are very, I feel like, always give players, new players, time to bed in, even if they are playing poorly. I don't think he has been a disaster. I think against Real Madrid, he was our best player on Tuesday. The thing with modern-day football fans, they just tie everyone, any player, down to goals and assists and don't look at what he actually does on the field. And you've got to then say, it's not just Florian. The whole team's bad. The whole team's playing poorly. So then to say, like, you're almost saying Florian Wirtz, I know the money's big, but to say, you're acting as if, like, he's going to come in and, like, be the saviour, the Lord and saviour of the team, and be the best player by far straight away. He's still only 22.
I think
he's younger than half.
On Sky... On Sky yesterday, Micah Richards had a proper discussion about him, and it wasn't kind in any way. TalkSport, he's been slammed on.
It's 10, 11 games to get to this point. Like, if you look at, like, genuinely Kai Havertz, just, like, you say like Werther's what, 22? How old was Havertz when he went to Chelsea? He must have been at a similar age. He wasn't given a sniff. Like, no one gave him a hope. And then he's had to live with that now, even at Arsenal. He's still just a big joke. Werther's been given a bit of thingy, number one, maybe because it's Liverpool. But, like, I don't know why he's got a reputation that where we can't talk about how ineffective he's being. I know you'll say he is being. He isn't. He's not assisting. He's not scoring. So what is he doing to not be criticised for? That's what I don't understand.
I think Griffin's right. He is getting slated by everyone outside of Liverpool.
I genuinely don't think he is. I think I could give you 10, maybe off the top of my head. So many players who come in from abroad.
Yeah.
Got that target on the back. We'd have got to deliver this 007 thing, which has become a thing recently. Like, you see memes, you saw memes of, like, as I say, like Havertz or Mudrick, players like that. Considering I live in Liverpool and a lot of my social media is Liverpool people, I don't see any memes about that. I don't see.
Yeah.
I just thought, for some reason, and I'm not saying it's a Liverpool thing because Liverpool can't do anything about this, but I just don't understand it. I don't understand why it's not all everyone's talking about, but the fact Liverpool are 3 points above Everton. Considering they were going to win the league 5 weeks ago, they're 3 points above Everton, and they're a £120 million player. The golden boy of Europe has done nothing.
Yeah, I think I take your point. I've seen a lot of criticism, but fair enough, you're probably all right. He's not being like made out to be a joke, which is, yeah, right or wrong. But I think because Liverpool as a whole at the moment are so poor, I think he's potentially going under the radar about how ineffective he's been. And there's no denying he's been ineffective. We signed him, as you said, the golden boy. We, like, I didn't watch Leverkusen last season. Like, you know, I'm not going to claim to do that. But when we signed him, it was as exciting a signing as we potentially ever made. He was the man, like, that everyone in Europe wanted, and we got him. And he doesn't fit in a number 10. He played off the left wing yesterday. He was shite. He doesn't play as far of a free, a part of a free, doesn't play as far as part of a free in the middle. He doesn't play as a false nine. So it's like, and I don't know if I said this on the podcast, but I've said it in the past. It's like we signed a luxury player in a system that it doesn't allow for a luxury player. We don't have that number 10 who can, like, the game doesn't. I know we spoke about that as well as topics. The game doesn't allow that. Doesn't, like, that's why City now have that, like, they don't have luxury play, they're a different size to what they ever have been. And I think he's probably not getting criticised as he should do, because as a whole, Liverpool are so off it. And I think, if anything, it's Slot who's getting the criticism, probably deservedly so, because the team looks abject of ideas and of an identity that Liverpool have had for what 10 years since Klopp. You know what I mean? Every team at the top now, you see an identity. You know exactly what to do in Arsenal, City. Liverpool City is synonymous with being one of the best games of the season all the time. It's always a battle. There's always goals. It's a real good game. Yesterday it was 75 minutes. I stopped watching almost because just like, this is, no way were we going to win the game.
Yeah, I think.
In fairness, the way goals yesterday.
Yeah.
That is for sure.
I still think, like, I don't. He's obviously not been effective. I do agree with that. I think most of it comes down to Liverpool and being very poor. Not last season before, when they went unbeaten, Leverkusen, I did happen to watch a lot of their games because for some reason German football is quite big in America and it's on ESPN a lot. He was brilliant, but the luxury piece that Griffin's mentioned, Leverkusen would switch to like a 3-4-3 in possession, and the left back Grimaldo would go into midfield, and Wirtz would become like this free player who would just be able to do what he wants. I think that's a very valid point that we can't do that, and Wirtz has been required to do a lot of other stuff. And I would say when the team clicks, he looks good, and he did that on Tuesday night. I stand by it. I think he was our best player on Tuesday night against Real Madrid. And when the team doesn't, it's very heightened how ineffective he is.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, just wanted to get that off my chest. But we will move on just briefly been a lot of Liverpool. We'll touch quickly on Everton. On as Callum said earlier, potentially the best we've played this season. So, Carl, what were your thoughts on the game?
Well, I want to slag off weight.
Oh, sorry.
I thought we were. I thought it was the best on and off the ball we've been all season. I think off the ball, miles better than we have been. The last few weeks, I thought we've looked a bit, devoid of ideas, a bit lethargic, a bit slow. I thought like the Sunderland game was there for the taking. We should have been like 3-0 up after 20 minutes because they were awful. And they made about 5 mistakes in their own third where we should have capitalised, but we didn't because we were just a bit too slow. But I thought on Saturday we put a lot of pressure on Fulham's back line. We made them play the ball like out of play a lot, I thought. The only times where they just misplaced passes, that went straight out because we were pressing very well. It made a big difference having Garner at right back. I think it just meant that we were able to kind of... I think any kind of intensity, I think, comes from your back line anyway, and just being able to kind of get out quick, play the ball quick, you know, get to the man quicker. I think having Garner at right back, apart from instead of O'Brien, and then having like Iribunim in the middle, I think made a big difference with like energy. I think that allowed for Dewsbury Hall to then do more running and kind of put himself out, which I think he's like unbelievably fit. Him, he covers some distance like throughout the game. He just seems to be everywhere. I thought we were really good, really impressive. Played some good football, carved up good chances. I know we moan that we had 3 goals offside and that. You won't hear any moaning from us, though, because it's offside and we respect the ref's decisions. This side, the Percy side. But I think having 3 goals disallowed is like a good sign in terms of like, you know, we're creating chances, we're carving out chances, and they were all kind of marginal, kind of offside. I don't actually think the offside that we had gained much of an advantage like to the play. If that makes sense, it didn't really change the attack very much.
It was interfering with the play, definitely. They were all aware.
They actually all were, Max, and I agree. Nobody duffed out the way of the ball.
Can I just jump in on that for a sec? I watched the highlights here, the American ones. They never showed replays of any of the offsides, which I always thought was weird. So were they, how close were they?
They were all dead close, but they were all definitely offside. So the first goal, but they're all in the build-up, though. I don't think... So, the first goal, the cross comes in, it's Tarkowski's flick onto Ndai. He's kind of just, his shoulders. It's one of them where, he's just kind of his shoulders offside as he heads it kind of thing. Then he ends up kind of, I think he touches another 3 players before he ends up scoring. The Tierno Barry one, it's Ndai just at the near post, and it's kind of just, as he's sliding together, he's just kind of ahead of the ball. It's more like, he's ahead of the ball in that one. And then... the third one is probably that's the most similar to the Liverpool one, or most similar to that rule in terms of Barry's stood in an offside position, doesn't actually get the ball, but he's just, the defender has to defend
that,
it.
That was the one where kind of knocks it out. I couldn't figure out what that one was when I'm watching that.
He's definitely offside, and Barry tries to pass it to him, and he's stood in an offside position, but I mean, Barry wouldn't have controlled it anyway.
He stretches for the ball, which makes the defender stretch.
As a defender gets it.
He's Dewsbury also. It's kind of like, if Barry doesn't make a play for that, the defender probably deals with it differently. So I would say, in terms of you say there's no replays, being in the ground, they put a still after VAR, they put a still on the screen.
Yeah.
I do think for 2 of them anyway, for the Tarkowski one and the Barry one, I thought even just from the still on the screen, I think you could see they were off.
They put the still of the game on the screen at the ground.
They put a still of so they'll do go through the decision, and then they'll put the still on the screen. Yeah,
you've got to if a decision,
if you have a big screen,
you've got yeah. It's only Liverpool and United who haven't got them.
I was going to say Liverpool don't have any.
The stadiums, but you've got if the decisions change, you've got to show it to the crowd.
Yeah, and all the fans in them grounds are on the phones anyway, so it's fine.
I hate that rule. Just on that one, and tying in with the referees, you know, when the referee now has to announce the thing, And they're clearly like shitting themselves doing it when it zooms in on them on telly.
Before he said that, he nearly mixed up his words, didn't he? When he gave
him a pen,
he didn't know how to pronounce your keeper's name, so he didn't say it. He went keeper,
number two. Yeah.
But I think just I should have said this before. VAR saying I was kind of linked to that, and you're talking about like VAR being what it is. When you have the Premier League Twitter account, like, tweeting things with, like, popcorn emojis and stuff, like the showpiece and, like, look at what's happened here, I think that's kind of... And then you have a 45-minute show on a Monday morning about referees and these decisions. I genuinely think part of it all is kind of the show and to kind of make clips and to make it look like... Yeah. Same with the ref doing that. It's like, can we just add a bit of drama to make it like a reality TV show? Yeah. I think that's kind of... The Premier League should be tweeting things like that of, like... decisions being like contentious and like with popcorn emojis and things. It's not like it's not a reality TV show. It's not. I think they're trying to make it like entertainment and viral and clips and all that, which I think is what VAR allows them to do. It allows them to make it a lot more kind of dramatic. But
that's the most sensible thing you've said in a long time. I can't. Truly. Give it up.
But yeah, the Blues were good. I enjoyed it. It was a good performance. I think everyone played well. Michael Keane has had a great season, and Dyer was great. Grealish was great again. I don't know. There's been four or five games this season where I've thought we haven't necessarily played bad there, but we've just kind of shot ourselves in the foot a bit, and we just haven't kind of took the game by the scruff of the neck when we should have done, or we've just been a bit like we've done everything great, but then just kind of fell short, and it's just kind of we've not quite got over the hurdle. I thought on Saturday that was like the game where everything kind of just looked like it was kind of falling into place. But yeah, I don't get me wrong, I think we got away with a couple where Pickford made a couple of saves, and they had a couple of half chances where they weren't great. But I think sometimes when a team doesn't play great, you've got to give some kind of credit to the opposition as well. I think we made sure that they didn't play well.
I thought he's looked good. I watched most of the game. I thought he's genuinely looked good. I thought honestly Tarkowski looked impressive as well. I think he had a very good game.
Yeah. I think from me, I'd say like last week I was almost like I posed the question, didn't I, about like would Moyes be brave enough to like make changes? I feel like everyone's asking for certain changes. Moyes wasn't brave enough. And then this weekend he did it, and he put Jacob Ryan on the bench, moved Garner to right back. Put, as you say, put Irby Unum in there. It kind of like, I feel like it just gave everyone a bit more purpose in that midfield, because I feel like when Garner, I don't rate Garner as a centre mid, I'll be honest. James Garner, that is. And I feel like when it's those three, as in Garner Gay, James Garner, and Usby Orr, not really anyone knows where they're meant to be playing. It just, they're all running around a bit, not doing anything in particular, which I think is a problem. Whereas with Irby Unum and Garner Gay, it just, as you say, it just allows you to be all just to kind of drive us forward, which was great.
He can drive with the ball.
Yeah, he was very good. And he was even like, is it interceptions? It was like he was on something, I thought, at times where like they'd play a ball and he was on it. He was trying to win every single thing before it got
like,
it.
Everywhere, like no matter where he picked up balls, like who was that? It was like Jusby Hall, then he'd do it like right back, left back. Yeah. 10, he gets around the pitch rail. But I think I love James Garner. I think James Garner is great, and I think it's one of them. You kind of similar to what you were saying before, Griffin, about like those plays that you haven't got to Liverpool anymore. Garner is kind of a bit like that play where you just know he'll give like a 7 or 8 out of 10 every week. I think he's dead comfortable on the ball. He gets around the pitch. He'll tackle. He's quite composed.
Just to clarify. I mean, I appreciate your point, but I just want to make it clear, James Garner would get nowhere near our team. Like, I just want to make that.
I wasn't saying he would, but I'm just saying in terms of that type of player that he'd kind of play any. I think he could play anywhere for us.
I thought he played well. Yeah,
he'd do a job. The games where we had him at left back, and he'd done a job. He's right back now. He does a job. Sends me that. I like him. He's not physically very kind of impressive. Is he? He's not massively strong, but. I think he's in a team that isn't blessed with loads of technically good footballers. I think he's quite technically good, and he'll play just an easy pass and he'll get us up the pitch. And I think the ball coming to him at right back is infinitely better than it is at Jake O'Brien coming in. Yeah. And it just allows us to start. It allows us to start attacks. I think we just look more comfortable within it. But I think, sorry, I don't want to drag on. We've got other things to go on to. But on the Moyes' changes, I don't know why you bring O'Brien on. Why bring O'Brien on in that game there? It was stupid. Bring Diblin on or someone on, like, just bring someone else on. Give, you know, that was a game where you could give Diblin 10-15 minutes where there's no pressure on him. Just kind of go and see what you can do. Just go and enjoy it, because we're going to lose and die and Gay in January, aren't we? So these players need to be getting minutes.
I'd also say, though, after like 75 minutes, and Giles dead.
Like, yeah, well, he went off injured, didn't he, in the Sunderland game, didn't he?
Yeah. But like, I know there's an argument to international break, so why take him off? But he just looked dead. And you think it's the perfect like for like to put Diblin on. But
yeah,
again, sometimes the substitutions are a bit mad. One thing I will say, I've been critical of Tierno Barry. I thought he had a much better game. I don't believe he was as good as everyone made out he was. I think he put himself about a bit more. His control, as in, like, he was his layoffs and that were quite impressive. However, there were quite a few times when he just fell over, which, like, I don't know where you were in the ground, Cal, but there was one point, as in my, like, far right over here, and he kind of ran down the line, did really well, beat a couple of players, and then just fell over. Everyone around me was just laughing at him. Like, yeah. I don't think your star striker people should be laughing at him personally. But I also think he's not your kind of player, is he, Barry? No.
He's not got a touch like Cal did. Cal Taylor on sixpence.
Cal talks about technical players. Tierno Barry is not one of those.
Callum is the opposite of Tierno Barry, as in Callum could touch it, turn it, but Tierno Barry can run and is strong. That was the difference, Cal. Sorry.
Run with him and keep the ball. As you were saying there, he got a clap off because I think everyone was a bit like, yeah, you've tried. You weren't as bad as Beto would have been if he'd have started.
Yeah. I was going to say a question for Everton fans. Like, I think against Fulham, you played on the front foot more than... I mean, I don't watch Everton every week, but you played on the front foot, it seemed. Do you reckon Moyes would do that more if he had a striker, if he could nick a goal? Do you think he knows that Beto and Barry are what they are?
I was going to say
it's great to having like strikers that are exactly that, though, aren't they? Dennis Shaqalersi type players.
I like Beto coming off the bench. I think Beto off the bench, he's like, I'm not going to say he's a dangerous prospect, but he's a bit of like a he causes chaos a little bit because he's quick, he's strong. He can run people ragged at that point. If he comes on with like 20 to go when we need a goal, not that he's going to give us the goal, but he might make a bit of space. I like him on the bench. I don't like him when he starts, but I also don't think Barry's definitely not the answer. And I also think, and I'll go to you last thing in a minute, Cal, but my point was going to be, I also think he needs to just swerve having these big tantrums when he gets subbed off. Like, the other day, like, I text Max a picture when he changed his Instagram picture to him on the bench. And then he got brought off after, what, like 18 minutes or something? And he's throwing his arms off, having a big sulk. And you're like, mate, like, you're lucky to be on this long. I honestly just think he's just a big baby. And then Everton fans humoured him by giving him a standing ovation. Like, I'm not one of these people who stands up and gives substitutes a standing ovation. I just don't think they've earned it. But he hadn't. But everyone humoured him and I went, oh, it's okay, mate. Like you would do to a toddler. Just grow up. Like, it costs £30 million. You just need to just face it. Be good at footy.
Yeah. So I'll do that and I'll do the point I was going to say. But yeah. I think the Sunderland game where he starts like sulking, it's like you've missed from 3 yards out. If you put that away, you don't get brought off for that.
Yeah.
Score that first and then moan if you want to moan, but put that one away. And then the other day, it was like, you've played 80 minutes. You've played half well. The fans are kind of half pleased with how you played. You still haven't scored. You didn't do anything. Just kind of, that was like a fair sub. That wasn't like you've been hooked after like 48 minutes.
Yeah.
That was like, there was nothing wrong with that substitution at all. That was like, yeah, well in 80 minutes, good lad. Also, I was going to say on a striker point and we'll move on. But I mean, I was a big fan of DCL, Sean knows, but it's almost kind of like we let him go at the wrong time. Yeah. He's like the striker we just need now. Someone who'll keep the ball up there, hold it up, lay it off to let our three most dangerous players go and do what they need to do. We've got Grealish and Ndai there who just put the ball into the box so much, but none of our strikers put it away. DCL wasn't clinical, I know people say he wasn't a good finisher and that, but the great season he did have was when we had somebody who would actually feed him the ball and give him, and you know, create chances. We've let him go, and we've kind of built the team for DCL, but let him go, which is a bit frustrating.
Did you let him go, or did he leave? Well, we let him go in as much as we didn't give him what he wanted.
Yeah. I suppose we didn't give him.
I do think Callum's right there. I think anyone would agree with that. He's made that is a good point.
That's a very good point.
Calvert-Lewin would finish a lot more and better, and
but not even just as a finisher, no. Just holding the ball, just general all round play, and kind of letting, because we get it forward and then they lose and we're defending again. But Calvert-Lewin would hold that up to allow for Grealish and Dye and Jude to pick it up in that space that they want to pick it up in. I think he'd just be better at that. But I honestly, I'd kind of work out a way to just play the four attacking midfielders without an actual out and out number nine. I just find them, let them do that and kind of work it between them. Because it's not as if you're losing a number nine, as if, you know, Beto can hold it up now. You say, no, but we need a big man up front, because you're not doing that job anyway. I would just try and play our attacking four and just let them kind of rotate between each other. I think that is more of a threat than what kind of having Barry or Beto number nine is. But I think we probably went on too long, Sean. You're probably looking a bit like, let's move on. So.
No, it's fine. I'm very, very aware of, we've been on here for over an hour and we haven't even gone through the game yet, which is mad. That wasn't anything
you said, Max, that's silver goal.
Yeah. Watch this.
Right, so for today's game, we're going to do something which you might have seen online quite a few times. I'm not quite sure what it is. Most of these trends have a name. I don't know what this one's called. Now, what I did was I sent you all through over the weekend a couple of questions I wanted you to answer. However, with each set of questions, I asked one of you a different question. Now, your job is you've got to lie at this point. And at the end of each question, once you've all given your arguments, I want you to tell me who you think the imposter is, who the liar is, who's been asked a different question, if that makes sense. You don't want to give the game away, because if you make it obvious that you were given a different question and this wasn't the question you were asked, you're gonna be out straight away. So you need, whatever question I give you, you need to argue your answer as if that's your question. Let's see how this one goes, Kay. Question one. I'll tell you your answers first. Okay. Griffin said Rooney versus Man City. Max said Di Canio versus Wimbledon. And Callum said Cisse against Chelsea. And the question is, that two of you were asked, the question is, what do you think is the best Premier League goal ever? One of you was given a different question, and that was their answer. You need to work out who was given that different question. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with our very quick arguments, you give your arguments why you think that is the best goal ever, and then you're going to have to work out who you think's a liar. Right, so Max, you go first.
So the Canio's against, I thought it was Palace. I obviously got that wrong, Sean. It's Wimbledon. It's Wimbledon.
Liar.
it's the scissor kick one. That era of football, and that West Ham kit, the Doc Martin sponsor, the flight of the ball across, the way it's gone like wide of the box and then he scissor kicks it back across, the mitre ball, I think everything about it was just quality. It was also, there's other ones that obviously you might think are better, but that was the type of one you could go recreate on the park with your mates. You can do an overhead kick and land in your head. To be honest, I didn't really fancy doing that, but you could try and recreate a scissor kick. Yeah, I just thought technically as well, it was really brilliant. So I don't know what else to say, really, Sean.
That's a good argument, Max.
Oh, also the camera angle behind the goal with like coming across, and it just like perfectly times with his like jump and the flight of the ball going in the net, and Andy Robertson ducking out the way.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Good argument, Max. So if you're paying attention there, lads, let's go for Callum next.
So I think the Cissé goal is the best Premier League goal. I think purely just for like the technique on the strike, the way he's hit that to kind of go into that far post is unbelievable. I think the angle is just like outrageous. To even like think of shooting there, I think is insane. He was in, obviously, in like, it was that period where it was like he was in great form and he was kind of becoming like a cult hero. And the way he's hit that, like with his just sliced across, hasn't he, with like his laces over the right, and the fact that it's kind of looped over and went into the back post. I think if it goes into the near post, I don't think it's as impressive. I think he's hit that there, but the fact that it kind of comes over and goes over check, and I think it's check into that back post is just unbelievable. It's like it's a strike iron nothing, and I think it's kind of. Things, I think goals like that where they're kind of just off the cuff and it's a striker like kind of just doing like a reaction, kind of doing it by feel, and just the way he struck that, I think that's why that makes that the best goal. I think also like Drogba's reaction, you can see Drogba where he turned around to Pardew, he's kind of like smiling. I think Drogba knows how good of a goal that is, and I think that's kind of a seal of approval. So I think that is the best Premier League goal.
Okay, right, well done, Callum. Griffin, you're up.
Yeah, I think it's Rooney's overhead kick against City. The reason I think that is the moment itself, just being in the moment that it is. Obviously, the derby, obviously being Rooney, you know, the player that he was, probably the best or one of the best ever Premier League players. City were just coming through. You can imagine being in the ground and that goes in, that it's almost like a shock factor when to do an overhead kick. I know it. People will argue that it bounces off his shin, but that technique, in my book, is unbelievable. I remember it vividly, like that goal going in and being like, oh my God. And his celebration as well, when he stands there and just goes like, I'm Wayne Rooney type thing. It's pretty, I think it's a monumental goal.
Okay, right. So that was three very strong arguments there. You've got to pick a liar amongst you.
Can I guess what the question might have been for the liar? Is it what's the most overrated goal in Premier League history?
Correct, that was the question. So someone here went from overrated.
I think
went from overrated to greatest, and that's my argument.
I know the liar.
I think. Well, I did think, I'll be honest, I thought it was you, Max, but then you asked that question. So if you've double bluffed or not, but the fact that Griffin kind of says why it'd be overrated, if that was it, well, Sean told us that question, because it hit his shin. I don't know if he's like subconsciously said that by mistake and then said that he hit it with his shin. And I think Griffin maybe slipped up there. So maybe you shouldn't have given that answer, Sean, to tell Max is right.
Yeah.
I won't do that next time. Let's have a vote.
Work, Max.
Yeah. Let's have a vote. Callum, who are you voting for?
Griffin.
Max.
If I hadn't heard Cal say that, I would have missed that and probably picked Callum. Because I think Cissé's goal is massively overrated. But I also think Rooney's is too, because I think Garnacho's is better. Griffin.
Two votes for Griffin. Griffin, who are you going for?
So I was saying it was Max based on his description, but the fact that Max doesn't know that, I don't know. I think it must be Callum.
What?
Max has called me out, calling me the liar.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't know who had the original question about being overrated, then the overrated question must have gone to Callum. If Max genuinely doesn't know that I'm not the liar, it must be Callum.
Okay, I think I know.
So what you mean. I thought it was Max straight away, but Callum is trying to be clever, so it's Callum.
Okay, right. So it's two votes for Griffin, one vote for Callum. Imposter, raise your hand.
Hey, I'm reading like a book, mate.
you got sent to shops there.
Yeah.
Get a switch on the way, Max. Nice one, buddy.
That was good, that, Carl, genuinely, but yeah. Because I knew, yeah. You should go on the treat.
Right. Okay. Next one. We'll go with this one. Callum, you went for James McCarthy. Max, you went for Thiago Alcantara. Griffin, you went with Joe Cole. The question is, name a player from your club that could have been a captain but wasn't. Or someone who played for your team who you thought was captain material but they never made it to be captain. So, James McCarthy, can't remember who said, James McCarthy, Thiago Alcantara and Joe Cole. Anyone like to argue first?
I'll go first.
Go on.
So, I think James McCarthy would have made a good captain had his career probably not gone the way it did. He played in like a really good Everton team at the time. He was like maybe like Gareth Barry's understudy kind of thing at the time. And he was the kind of player that Everton fans would really like take to. I think the Irish connection helps the position he played. But then he kind of suffered a few injuries. I think he would have been like our centre midfielder kind of for the next 5, 6, 7 years possibly. The fans loved him. He was actually really good, James McCarthy, but then he suffered, I think, a couple of hamstring injuries or something, or maybe even a leg break, and his kind of career petered out a bit. But I think he would have been the type of player who then would have kind of went on to kind of progress to be that captain once kind of Barry went and went in that changing of that squad. I think he would have been a good fit to kind of be our next captain. I'm not sure if he would. I don't think he was captain for Ireland at any point, but I would have seen him as maybe like a captain material player for Everton, that the kind of the crowd would have latched onto, but also positionally, defensive midfielder next to Gareth Barry in a good team. Yeah, if things would have went the other way, I think he might have ended up being Everton captain and a bit of a, you know, he would have had a long stay at the club.
Right, fair enough. Right, I will ask Griffin to go next.
Yeah, I said Joe Cole as potential captain of Liverpool. I think the time that he signed more than anything was the reason I gave that. There's a famous picture where you see him next to, I think it's Jovanovic, Poulsen and some other Nomark. Obviously, it was following Gerrard as well in a particular squad that was bang average, and he had the experience and quality to just kind of produce a moment that I think we were so used to a captain who could grab the game by the scruff of the neck, whereas I think almost an alternative style of captain would be someone like Joe Cole, a bit of a flair, a bit of a, you know, could hit one from 30 yards or something like that. So hence I went Joe Cole.
Okay. Max, last up.
Yeah, I went Thiago. I love Thiago. I think he's one of my favourite players to, well, not to play for Liverpool, but a player that I really admired. He's obviously done a lot in his career, Barca and Bayern, then came to us, and it was an like, interesting sign. So I was like, this is like a superstar player that we're getting for cheap. I was also thinking, like, who would be a captain if it wasn't for the captains at the time? So Henderson, Van Dijk. Could have went like Robertson, but I think he was a leader off the field. He did a lot of stuff off the field with the community and things, and for Liverpool that people didn't really see much of. I think a lot of the players like them, and the South American players particularly. And there's that famous clip where Nunes is ready to come on off the bench, and he sort of goes past Klopp and like says something to Nunes and gives him like a kiss on the head. And yeah, Klopp's like, what are you doing? type thing. So he was a leader amongst those groups. And we had a lot of South American players for the last 10 years, 20 years, so I think he'd fit in really well as a captain.
Okay. Again, three good arguments there. Yeah, I'm wondering where your heads are at. Anyone want to give a vote and explain why? Anyone want to go first?
I mean, I just don't believe Griffin would have said Joe Cole to be captain of Liverpool.
Yeah, not a chance.
I think he's still about to try and give an answer, but I just can't imagine him actually believing that Joe Cole should have been captain. So, yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Okay, so you're going with Griffin?
Yeah, I'll go with Griffin.
Okay. Griffin, would you like to reply?
Yeah, obviously, Callum, you don't know anything about me, lad. Quite simple. I'll go Callum again, because I don't think that James McCarthy ever had the ability to be a captain of anybody, hence why he wasn't captain of Ireland.
Well, for Carl or for Griffin, Max, you decide.
I could never ever picture Joe Cole being captain of Liverpool Football Club, especially someone from London as well. Yeah, not a chance.
Things you actually wouldn't have a captain from London.
No, I wouldn't.
Even though he's a Premier League winner.
So what? He's fucking 5'2" and he got sent off in his first game against Arsenal. Shite me.
And when we signed Joe Cole, Max.
Yeah.
When we signed him.
Gerrard said he was better than Messi.
Exactly. So I said he was better than Messi as well. I said he was better than Puyol. As a leader, I had Puyol, Joe Cole above.
Right. Griffin, you have lost this round.
That's unfair. That's such a bad question. As you ever say, Joe.
I asked you. Can I just throw out there?
What was the question?
So I actually asked him two others before this, and he kept giving me answers that didn't work. So the question I settled on was: give me a bang average player, someone who's not great, but someone who wasn't bad. And he came up with Joe Cole. It was the best I could do because I said. Originally, it was give me anyone you've had on the back of a footy shirt, and he said Zidane. I was like, no, I'm not cool.
Yeah, I got done up like a kipper then, no.
And then he went,
who's lying? Or let me guess.
Joe Cole was right. Fine average, by the way, but let's move.
I think he probably was a Liverpool. No. Right, I've got two more. Do you want to do both or one? Or
do both. Do both.
Do both. All right. Right, next one then. I keep going in the same order. So, Callum, you said Newcastle. Max, you said Fulham. And Griffin, you also said Newcastle. Now, remember, it's all opinion-based. There's no right answers. But the question was, if you could play for another team other than your club, who would it be? So, you need to be thinking about why you would want to play for the team you said. Anyone want to jump in? No.
I'll nominate.
Griffin, you've not been first.
Let's go in the same order.
I'll nominate Sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I said Newcastle. Obviously, because of the fan base, the passion, the fans. The history that the club's got of being kind of the near misses, I suppose, a bit of an underdog story, but always had one or two or three or four world class or certainly like cult heroes, so to speak. I think you could get seriously passionate about supporting Newcastle based on the football you play and the fact like the city they're in, I think is quite similar to like Liverpool, where we're all from.
Okay, fair enough. Max?
Yeah, I just wanted to go with someone that like wasn't one of the main rivals or someone that was towards the bottom of the league. Sort of a mid-table team. Don't mind Craven Cottage as a stadium right on the water. It's a nice little stadium on the Thames. I think it's easy to pick someone like fucking Newcastle, but I don't like Newcastle because they beat us last season and all the stuff with Isak and that. So went for a
mid-table. And you answered a different question, but yeah. And your question is name a team beginning with F. That's why you didn't say Newcastle.
Yeah. Make sure you play Shipyards over this clip.
Yeah, yeah.
Newcastle till I die.
Moving on.
Go on.
Yeah, so I picked Newcastle. To be fair, similar reasons to Griffin, to be honest. I think the fact that it's a one club city and that I don't even need to say anything, do I? Really?
No, you don't.
Let's vote now. Yeah, I nominate.
Early in the season, I called Fulham a nothing club, and I hated them. And now I'm gonna play. I'm gonna pay for them.
I don't even do there. Cottage is a stadium. No one's ever said that. I don't mind Craven Cottage
is a stadium. Yeah. Why did you vote Fulham? I really love Brian McBride.
Great player.
Yeah, do you want me to finish my point or are we just going, Sean?
Sure. So, do you want to?
I was going to say, club City, and the fans will be behind you. Just trying to make yourself a bit of a cult hero. So I'd go with Newcastle, and I don't mind St James's Park as a stadium.
Right, go on then.
Was it Max? What question was he asked?
What was the question again?
Max, what was your question? Do you remember?
Who didn't like as a team outside of the usual rivals?
Yeah, other than your club's rivals, which team don't you like? And also, Max, I let you do that because I was testing to see if these lads listened in the early days and they didn't. Mm. Otherwise, they'd have known that.
I've
actually seen a TikTok, to be fair.
Corporate Andrew.
You on a TikTok, didn't you?
Yeah,
I did. Right, last one then. So we've all been imposter once. Open field again. Now, for the last one, I think this could be quite a tricky one. And I might, if I start laughing, I might just have to turn the screen off because I'm going to ruin this game. Right. Callum, you said John Stones. See, I'm going to laugh now. It's not giving it away, I promise. Max, you said Eric Dyer. And Griffin, you said Jack Wilshere. Now, the question was, which England player over the last 10 years do you think could manage them one day? Who could go on to be England manager?
I'll go first.
Go on, Mark.
Do you not need any more thinking time, Max?
What?
You're going Eric Dyer. You're definitely going Eric Dyer. Go on, Max.
I'm confused. Anyway, Eric Dyer. So I picked him because I was looking back at the squads, and I always think it's never the best players that can go on and be decent managers. I think even you can pick like Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard. I think they're both poor managers at certain levels. He's grew up in a different country, so he grew up in Portugal, didn't he? I think he was at Lisbon. So he can speak fluent Portuguese. He's also now in France and he's lived in Germany playing. I think someone like that could go down the coaching route. And he's a player that is a little bit versatile. He plays centre-back, centre-mid, can play a few positions. And I think those types of people can become decent managers. And that's about it.
Okay. Go on, Carl.
Right, so I picked John Stones to be could be a future England manager. I think as a kind of disciple of Pep, I think he seems to be somewhere out of the current last squads of City that you would think he might be one who would go on to kind of be a coach. And whenever you see him and Pep kind of talking on the sidelines, he always seems to like be really discussing tactics or discussing things. Pep seems to really kind of trust him with those kind of tactical conversations. And I think as a defender, and the way John Stones plays, he plays kind of like a Pep disciple almost, even before he played for Pep. So I think he would be someone who could well go on to become a coach. And then, you know, if he does follow the route that kind of Pep's other players have taken, then he could go on to be like kind of a top level coach and maybe someone who would manage England in the future. So I decided on John Stones.
Fair enough. Mike Griffin, last thought.
Yeah, I went with Jack Wilshere. Obviously, I mean, he's just transitioned into management recently. I know it's with a slightly lower club, I understand that. But I think the things that like the England fans have bought into and not bought into, one is youth, and Jack Wilshere, I remember seeing in the youth team and coming up through that and investing in the youth, which Southgate did well, and I think Wilshere would do well too. And also the style of play. So obviously he worked under Arsene Wenger in particular, and building that sort of culture and style that Wenger did at Arsenal. I think as a manager, I'm sure he's going to do that anyway. So I went Jack Wilshere.
Okay, three good arguments. I feel like, yeah, another solid one there. Anyone certain? It's any of you? Anyone got any ideas?
Certain it's one of us.
I don't know. That's
yeah, I mean...
You said it's tricky and you laughed, but... I feel like they're good choices.
I,
the two.
I don't think Eric Dier was good enough as a player to be a manager. Never mind. Yeah, he hardly made it as a player, did he?
Yeah, I disagree with that as well.
He's played at Bayern Munich, Tottenham, played for England, like
playing for Monaco.
Monaco right now.
He's had a good career.
I think Griffin's answer of Jack Wilshere is a mad coincidence for that to kind of. That's an answer for the question that we think everyone's being asked, but then could also be another answer. You know what I mean? Griffin like works well for that, where the others haven't. The others have been a bit of a joke answer. We've known the third one straight away.
I know what you mean.
Jack Wilshere works. If that's like a lie, he's been very lucky in the fact that the other question kind of tied into that. Eric Dier, I just don't think. I mean, when I just
Callum, I am a faithful. I am a faithful.
I can't believe Max would have fought Eric Dier to be a manager.
I also vote Max.
He was a bit hot off the press there, though.
You started talking.
He was.
I say John Stones is thick as shit, and you think he'd be a good manager?
He's a blue. Don't forget, Callum used to absolutely suck him off.
John Stones or
who's Jack Wilshere coaching right now?
Luton. He's the manager.
Is he the manager, Luton?
So when I got asked the question, it just signed. I think the day before or something like that.
Oh wow, so that was convenient.
Hence why I picked Jack Wilshere. I'm a faithful. Trust me.
Right. Who are you going for, Cal?
I'll go for Max.
All right. I'm assuming Griffin's going for Max.
Yeah.
All right. Max.
I'm gonna go for Griffin. I don't know. John Stones is a funny one. It's interesting because I think his reasoning for it's all right, but Griffin's one with the timing of Jack Wilshere. Question could have been something to do with like maybe a player that could have done more for England and didn't because of something, like because he was injured all the time. I can't think of what the question would be for John Stones, so I'm going to go Griffin.
Okay. 2 for Mark, 1 for Griffin. Could the imposter reveal themselves?
I'm the real Sim Shady. I will stand up. Please stand up.
Yeah, so
3 points to me there, lad.
Griffin was asked which player will be remembered as like unfulfilled potential. So you are right, Callum. It just struck lucky.
Yeah,
that's a good argument. That's like traitors' behavior. Genuinely, that's what I kept saying. The faithful, because it was like, sorry, Callum.
It's all good.
And I've got a green cloak at home. Yeah.
And you look like Alan Carr.
Yeah.
Right, I don't even know who won there, but it doesn't really matter. We all had a good time, so it's fine. I do know who lost, though, and I'm Max.
Yeah. Although I just won that one, so I've got it back.
You won what one?
That one I picked Griffin to be the traitor.
I don't think it works like that. I think it's
why not? I should get a point.
Yeah. We can wear points out, or we can just have fun. I don't know, it's up to you lot.
Points.
Who got away with being a traitor? Was it Callum and Griffin, one each?
Yeah.
Sorry, Max. I'll try and ask me questions better next time. But yeah, nice one. We will leave the game there and begin to draw a close to this absolute monster of an episode. If you're still listening, thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely not.
Yeah, because we have almost switched off at this point. Right, now, my closing question is also a bit mad, but I feel like the answers are a bit more straightforward than the question. Right. So, to close us off, I was on a first aid course last week. 2-day first aid course. My first aid trainer was an absolute nutcase. And he was telling us that in the next 12 months, the first few head transplants will be taking place. So, he gave us all the background of it. I want to know from you, if you could replace your head with somebody else's football and brain, who would you want? Which player would you love to play like and have their football and brain? And this is just so you know, you've all been asked the same question here.
Callum's gone pappy seasick. I'll go first.
Go on.
Busquets would be mine. Yeah. I think he's widely renowned as one of the best, and not underrated by any means, but kind of under the radar almost about how good and how important he was. I think Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets doesn't work as well as it did without Busquets. I mean, he wasn't even fast, but he goes past people like... I mean, you could pick any of them three, actually. We could, in fact, I might just argue for all three of us. Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets. I go Busquets.
Okay.
Is it the quote you watch the game, you don't see Busquets, you watch Busquets, you see the whole game?
Yeah, our boss is that. Is that of the Take the Ball, Pass the Ball documentary?
I think it might be, yeah.
Have you seen that, everyone, by the way?
Yeah, I don't believe it. You've not seen that or watched that?
Have you seen it? Not seen it, Max?
No.
You've not seen it, Max?
What's
Max, as a so, coach,
so,
mate,
so good.
You'd love it. It's unbelievable.
What is it,
yeah?
It's about Guardiola's Barcelona and the style he implements, but then, like, obviously Take the Ball, Pass the Ball is kind of like just a passing quote, I suppose, but kind of sums it up, but... It goes into detail about the tactics and that team, obviously the best team probably we've ever seen. And like some players that he signed, like there's this centre-back from Shakhtar, I don't know how to pronounce his name, who's like meant to be a world beater. And he comes in and the first game he plays, or the first few games, he tries to do two long balls. And I think they pay off, I think they actually come off, and he gets subbed at half-time and then he ever plays again, because it's so like regimental of that system that Pep introduced. Max, it's like genius, isn't it, Cal?
Yeah, I can't believe you haven't heard of it or seen it. Like,
watch it.
How long has it been out?
Years.
Probably ten years. Busquets as soon as you said it. That's who I thought of. Like, but I have said before watching Griffin play that you've done. You watch the game, you don't see Griffin. You watch Griffin, you see the whole five-a-side game as well.
To be fair, if you watch the game, I might be being sick on the sidelines. So,
if I can, I'll go Busquets as well.
Yeah, it's fine. I have the same answer, Max.
I was going to go the other side. Like, I think that's a very good answer. I think it's hard to beat that. But someone like Modric, or going back like years, though, I think he was so underrated. And he never got like the acclaim all the rest of the players did, because he was part of that Galactico team. But like Guti at Real Madrid, if you remember Guti, what a player he was. And he just saw the game so differently. He was just so good at like sliding little through balls and stuff like that. I loved him. But he was never the level of everyone else, but he was just so brilliant at football and what he saw. So, but it's hard to argue any of that midfield three of Barca.
All them Galacticos said about Guti being like, he was as good as them all. There's that back heel assist, he does that famous back heel. It's like, what on earth is that?
I don't know why he doesn't shoot. He's one of them with the keeper. It's mad.
Yeah, amazing. Sean, who's yours?
Assist bonus.
Well, mine was going to be linked to an assist, because I think the greatest assist of all time for me is the Fabregas one. Is a Chela's goal when he kind of gets pinged to him and he kind of like kills it, but also like knocks it over the back line of defence as well. I think my first thought was like a Busquets. I think for me, as you well know, Callum, more than anyone, my main issues on when I'm playing footy is like I'm not good with the ball. I just panic even now, like as a 32-year-old man. I'm still living in my head of thinking I'm not good enough here, and I just want to get rid of the ball as quick as possible. And then you look at someone like Busquets, who you've never seen a man so good on the ball and be so hard to take the ball from. And like I love players that like slow the game down. That's why like I'm not quite putting them in the leagues of like Busquets and Fabregas, but like someone like Tosh, who when Tosh plays, he does slow the game down. Like
no, put him in the leagues, mate. He's up there.
Like
he's top
like,
three.
From when like I've played with Tosh, right? I do this thing. I just love how he slows the game down, and like he is great. Even now, like he can barely run, but he's boss. But yeah, I think I'd go with Fabregas. I'm going with Tosh. I'm going Fabregas. I just think It was similar again, like that Spaniard. It's all like you think about the Spanish team. Fabregas, I know he couldn't quite get in it, but I'd probably seen him more because I didn't watch La Liga as much as you probably did. I was watching him in the Premier League, watching Fabregas come through with Arsenal, then later come back to Chelsea. And like at Chelsea, he was unbelievable, considering he'd been away, being at Barca and came back as well. His passing, the way he saw the game, and then again, that assist to Sherlock, I just think is absolutely unbelievable. I'd do anything to just touch the ball like that just once. Once in my life, I'd love to kill it like that. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Fabregas, so I would probably go in. Yeah.
Right.
We'll leave it there anyway, because that has been a very long one. Hopefully it's been enjoyable. I've enjoyed it. Hopefully you three have, and anyone listening, hope you have as well. Thank you, Callum, for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
As always, Max Griffin, nice one for joining me as well.
Nice one.
If you are listening, watching, if you are, yeah, kind of watching us on YouTube where we've started like breaking it down into different segments, give us a like, give us a follow, comment, share with your mates, tag us in stuff, just kind of get our name out there. Because again, every week, I don't know about you, Max, I feel like every week we're getting more in the swing of it, and we're getting, yeah, producing better podcasts. So hopefully soon we'll be getting someone with it, but we could do with your help with a couple of shares and that kind of thing. So do that for us, and we will see you next week. Until then, it's been a blast.